Hello, everybody. Took me a few fits and starts, but finally came to realize that the only way I was going to find a somewhat comfortable approach to offering a Dharma talk was to drop the idea that I was going to be able to give one based on any perceived grasp of Zen or these teachings. That was a helpful first start. It's a hard job trying to put words to a practice that, as Bodhidharma says, does not depend on words and letters, but also may be helpful to know that I can't get it right. Maybe there's nothing to get right here. My particular time of life is intrinsically busy. I have my own business with employees and a young daughter. More home improvement projects started than I can finish. A dog that needs walking, dishes that need doing, life. When I first started practicing here, my daughter was really struggling for a while, and we were doing our best to get her the help she needed. And this, coupled with the day-to-day of my business and some mental health struggles of my mom that we're servicing, everything was definitely coming to a head, and something needed to shift. And I don't know how to put into words the subtle transformation I felt since I've started on this path. Sitting with you all and working with the teachers, how is it that just taking the time to sit on this cushion and engage with this practice of wandering off and coming back to this moment opens up space and brings more creative and patient approaches to day-to-day life. That'll maybe always be a mystery, I don't know. But it does. When I sit and see thoughts constantly bubbling up and my attention veering off into details on some house I'm working on, it can be hard not to feel like I'm wasting my time. But sitting regularly and coming back to this moment as best I can does something. And also seeing that it's different every time I sit. Sometimes I'll be less focused, more focused. Sometimes it'll be tiredness, or rarely, maybe a vividness. But some of the freest moments I've had sitting, especially during maybe the middle of a retreat, of just being off in a distracted world and finding like a minute there where I can just see that and just be okay with that. Once again, so small, but it feels like some seed of compassion in there, like to be able to do that. Like, if you can't do that for, and not like just selfishly, like I got self-compassion, but like I don't know how to bring anything into the world if it doesn't start there. And so it's been a big deal to see that. My life is still very busy, but I found ways to settle into it a bit more. And on a good day, I'm more and more able to let hard things be hard and easy things be easy. I'm still caught up in delusions and conditioning, but I wonder how truly free of that we can be. Maybe there's just a better way of relating to and looking at this karma honestly, accepting that it's a big part of what makes us human and relatable, and is the place from which we can start to bring about compassion. I think I heard Sansanim mentioned before that we can't get rid of our karma, but we can transform and work with it in a way that's beneficial. It's helpful to see more and more that it's not all about me and my little world, but that we are all in this together. We all face the day-to-day mundane struggles. We all have people and things we care about and will lose in time. We all have moments of beauty and suffering. Compassion seems to naturally arise out of this difficult practice of fearless looking and accepting. And I hope more and more I can see it stretch out from this practice, out into the world of close relationships, friends, work colleagues, clients, and all the people I come across. Compassion and gratitude for all the ways we suffer and all the ways we are supported. Practicing with this Sangha for the past 3 years has brought me back to the importance of community. Getting ready for this talk and looking a bit more through the lens of the precepts ahead of this upcoming precept ceremony has had me looking back a bit at where I've come from. I moved around a lot when I was a kid. One of the places that really stuck with me was an intentional community in Virginia that my dad and I moved to when I was 14. It was it's no utopia, but the adults in general seemed a bit more alive to me, lighthearted, and you know, they're all trying to figure out how to genuinely live together cooperatively, which I still think is a brave thing for people to be doing. I was also starting to creep into the adolescent years and had a blast hanging out with the more free-spirited young adults there, and ended up being given an amazing record collection. I had a couple of records that became a big influence later on in adolescence. So, I also felt like my dad was a bit more present and relaxed, a bit lighter and less stressed. We played cards and read out loud to each other every night, and I was playing in a band, and it was great. It was quite an experience, very different from, and it was only for 1 year, but it was a really condensed year in my memory. And so after high school, I made a couple of half-hearted attempts towards music school or a normal job, but ultimately decided to look into moving into an intentional community. I think that was based on this previous experience from being a kid and living in one, but I also think I was pretty angry at the world I saw, and I just couldn't see a way to be of benefit engaging in the conventional way. There's lots of backstory to that, but after visiting a couple of communities, I ended up landing at a bit of a wild one in North Carolina, where I lived for 3 years. I consider it my unique college experience. It was a great place to be in my early 20s. The draw of community has never really left my heart. I'm sure it's partially from all the constant picking up roots and moving and growing up a bit ungrounded, but also getting a taste of being that close in with people and seeing some of the resulting growth and potential. Finding the Sangha here, though completely different, has opened my eyes to see the variety of ways people come together and create community. It's more up to us as individuals to engage and deepen the communities we find ourselves in, and maybe get lucky enough to find these places of support and wisdom that have been doing this work all along. Spending so much anxious energy trying to find belonging, I've been pleasantly surprised to see how much more subtle and variable relationship is. I've always had an idealized expectation of what it is to be close to others. This practice has helped me appreciate how I can be in a more natural way with my close relationships and day-to-day interactions. Plenty of room for improvement, but there has been a bit more space to slow down and have more gratitude for the ways I'm supported and can show up for others. It's funny that when we first start coming to practice here, we don't really get to know each other in the usual way. But after sitting together, and maybe especially after a retreat, we start to feel a recognition of each other and a sort of subtle blending and mutual support. We're all engaged, distracted, sleepy, achy, and elated in our own way, apparently, separate from each other. But there's something in this collective practice and group presence, just to sit and breathe, to look out with ears open and the gravity equally embracing us in this upright form, to see the tangle of thinking, but know we are all trying to be still and trying to return to this moment together. I just wanted to end with a quote from this book I'm reading right now of "When You Greet Me, I Bow" from Norman Fisher. By bowing, we are acknowledging a friendliness and respect, but also a distance. A bow expresses our love and respect, but the space between us when we bow also expresses that we understand our aloneness and that we can never assume that we understand one another. We meet in the empty space between us, a space charged with openness, silence, and mystery.